con el under $3 menu de McDonald's, un McChicken es solo $1.50. Resulta que ser el héroe de tu primita solo te cuesta $1.50. Por un McChicken, good deal. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
Welcome to the Games Gone podcast with me, Tom Ross, and my guest this week, well, really needs no introduction to football around the Midlands, that's for sure. It's former Aston Villa winger, Tony Morley. European Cup winner, I'll throw that in, sir, but we'll talk about that shortly. Tony, first of all, welcome to the podcast. Good to speak to you.
Nice to see you, speak to you as well, Tom. Like, nice to see you again, mate.
Brilliant.
18 months, mate, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Pandemic and everything.
Have you been locked in for 18 months? I don't believe that.
I've been locked in. No. I've sneaked out a few times. Don't worry about it.
When did you know that you're going to be a professional footballer? You always loved football, but when did you think, I've got a chance here?
I don't think, maybe when I probably made my debut at Preston as a maybe 18, 17 year old, my full debut, then you think, well, I like this, you know. You see, when you're apprenticed, Tom, you always nerve, you never think, you know, you never think you're going to actually make the grade. But once you sort of like get in the first year and you feel comfortable, you're not out your depth, probably then really. So I was probably about 17, 18, I thought, well, I could make this could be a career for us, like, you know, but not until then, because it's all, you know, anxieties when you're young. You know, you're playing, you have bad games, you have good games, and you can't get consistency when you're younger. It's just mature then. Obviously, when you think the manager's confident enough to put you in the first team, because obviously then it's the job's on the line, so you think, well, he's got confidence in me, and I'm comfortable here. And then you think, well, yeah, I can handle this, this ain't a problem.
Was that a nervous time, your first game, or did your adrenaline get you through?
Nah, nervous, mate, you know, but it, good nerves. No, I wasn't worried about anything. Playing in front of 18,000 when you're like 18, 19, it's fantastic, you know, and very, very fortunate, you know. But no, I was never scared of any games. Nerves, I don't think any player will tell you that they're not nervous for the goal. Of course you are, any sport, you're going to be nervous, but good nerves, not bad nerves, yeah. Mate.
Were you always a winger?
Well, a midfield player, Tom, to be honest, yeah. People always say, like, I play out wide because I could do different things. I could take people out and score goals. But I would say I liked attacking. My favourite players when I was a kid, Tom, was always the wingers. You know, he wasn't the goal scorers. But, you know, I used to watch everything. Johnny Morrissey and team like that Jimmy Husband and all these type of players, you know, and you had Willie Johnson play for Celtic, George Best, obviously. Yeah. Then when I used to go as a boy's pen at Preston, when these type of people get the ball, the crowd, you could sense the crowd going up, and I thought, it must be fantastic, having 40,000 people standing on their feet. So it was always wingers, really, like, and Derek Temple was one of my favourites as well, like at Preston. So it was always wide men, people who could, like, get the crowd excited. So, you know, that's, so I decided, so, well, you know, when I played at school, I was leading goals, whatever, I could always score. Score was never no problem, but I didn't get the buzz of, like, thinking when 20,000 people jump up when you get the ball, like, you know. So I suppose that's what really turned me to be that type of player. I saw, like, an entertaining player as such, you know.
Everton had always had great wingers as well, as you mentioned. Did you ever, because that was your club, was that the club you thought I'd love to play for?
Oh, yeah. I could have turned down. Once with Harry Catterick was manager there, and they came to Preston. And then the other one was when Al Kennell was there. But it didn't happen, you know. So that's it. But yeah, but I used to still my club. You know, Villa. I've been very, very fortunate to play for Villa. It's a fantastic club. I'm very, very privileged. But I'm the old brigade. I mean, you don't change your colours. I supported him as a kid. He was going when I was a kid on the trainer. The atmosphere when they used to go up there, and the horses, the police on the horses, and the hot dogs, and the smell of everything. And it was just fantastic. It stuck with me forever and ever, you know. And that's why, really. And
Everton, and it's a ground I love going to as well, yeah. Goodison. I mean, wherever you go, you get passionate football fans, but it seems everybody in Everton's passionate about the football.
Oh, fantastic. I mean, it's when you go down the side streets, the houses back straight onto them, don't they? And you can sense the people up there, like, you know. I mean, I went up there as a reporter a few years ago, and I love the atmosphere, the lads. And you know yourself as well as me that the press seats at Goodison are very hard. If you don't get in there first, you've got no chance. They were made 50 years ago, and they haven't changed 50 years. So, honestly, because I was doing the radio for the Villa type of thing, I only had to get in there at 3:15. So, Jack and all the reporters were in there. My seat was down this row. I'm thinking, I can't ask all these reports to get up because they're going to have to unplug everything, I think. And I had a cup of coffee, and I had a meat pie, man. So I've asked the seats behind the supporters, so no problem. So they all stood, brilliant. And I've had to climb over the seat to get into my seat. So what I've gone and done, this is only like 4 years ago, what have I done? I've had to give the couple behind me, he said, can you hold them for a visit? No problem, bloke. And as I'd gone over the seats and I've turned around, he's drinking me coffee, he took a bite out of my pan, he said, Tony, he said, any chance of getting extra sugar next time? And that's your typical, like, and I, you know, that's brilliant, brilliant. That's what I love about them when you go up to Everton, Liverpool, the people, that's what the carrots are like. And even everybody started laughing, like, you know what I mean? I said, oh, I'll put extra sugar in for next time, mate.
I've got on great with them because people like Ronnie Goodless I know very well. Ronnie Goodless, great lad, and Sharpie and them, they're great lads.
Yeah. Well, I still, when I go back up to Ormskirk, over the last few years, I've become a good friend of Ronnie's and, they have a Sunday club or a Monday club where a few of them go out for a few drinks, like, and it's good fun, it's good banter, like, because they know all the carrots in Liverpool itself, so it's you know, football goes out the window, you know, and they're all experts on everything, like, you know what I mean? So, you know, but no, yeah, great lad. Ronnie's a good lad, he's a good player as well, Ronnie Goodness.
Were you a Gladys Street end?
Boys' Pen. He was Boys' Pen. He had a little thing in a corner, Boys' Pen. It was cheaper to get in there, like, you know what I mean? So, that was the only one I could get in there. But the only problem with that is all the big lads were at the front, you know, and I was just tiny, so I used to stand in the back, like, you know, that's when I couldn't understand about the wingers because they were closest to us, like, you know.
You were, I mean, you would, as a player, you wouldn't have known, but the church was before all the hospitality and clubs. We used to go in there for a piece of toast and whatever before a game.
Well, the boys' pen was just in front of there.
Oh, right.
It was, especially for under 15s, it was cheap one to get in there, like, you know what I mean? It was cheap and get in. And we always go, it was called the pen because it was a pen. Probably fit about 150 kids in there, we get in there. But no, it was fantastic, mate. You know, it was, you know, I wish, you know, sometimes you think, I wish you'd go back to that type of situation. But you know, football's evolved, it's a different kettle of fish now, isn't it?
Who was your inspiration as a kid, on and off the pitch?
I would say, Alan Ball was an inspiration because he used to play at Everton. Howard Kennan, Colin Harvey, I used to love him. But no, there was, I would say the older kids at school, when he used to play football, he used to watch the older lads play at school. You know, you see them playing for Ormskirk schoolboys and stuff like that. And then there was nobody, I would say, you know, it was always maybe Everton players. You know, I would say George Best and people like that because they were always on the television. Jimmy Johnson, great player. Willie Henson, great players. Yeah, Grinch, I remember, very fortunate to go to Goodison Park when the World Cup, see Grinch and Pelly and these people play, like, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, there were so many, and I always seem to be inspired by people who could do things different, like, you know, but no, me two brothers, I used to go out in the street, we used to get kicked all over the place, there was no love lost there, like, you know what I mean, you're going to be a player, you've got to be toughen up, like, you know, but we're on the road here, you know what I mean? You get kicked over on the road, like, you know, you can't, you're knackered, like, all of a sudden your knees, your arms, your back, they're all cut, aren't they? Like, you know what I mean? You got to be tough, man. It was the old brigade, like, you know, and it didn't do me no harm at all, Tom.
How did you come to get the chance to go to Preston? How did that happen?
Playing for Ormskirk Schoolboys. We had lots of scouts, you know, and I must have just had a good game, Tom, and somebody said, come in and said, we'd like a trial, and I still remember it's very, very strange. The coach was a fellow called George Barge at Preston, and I only played half a game. And I thought, I don't know what happened. I must have had a fairly decent, but I remember falling over or somebody kicking me, and the fullback was a very big leg, and he actually crawled through his legs because to get the ball. And I must have had a good game. And he took me off at half time, and he said, we'd like to go and see your. I was brought up with my grandparents, like, you know, so they'd like to come and see you. Parents said, well, I'm living with my grandparents. And I thought, well, that's it, he's finished, didn't he? So they come and he said, look, we'd like to take him. He said, we think he's got something. But the problem is he's very, very, very slight. And I was only like 4'10" when I left school. I was 14, 15, I was 8 stone. So what they'd done to Preston, I was very fortunate, Tom, is that they built me up. For the first 9 months, I didn't play a game. I couldn't hardly get a corner. They just built me, they built me up. Just get you. I couldn't even take a corner. I wouldn't tell a lie. No, it wasn't 9 months. I didn't play regular for a while because I didn't have the strength to take a corner. Yeah. And Preston knew this, so I was very fortunate. And they moved me into their hostel, so they realised that they put me on malt and all the worst thing in the world, malt and steaks and all this type of stuff. But looking back, I was very fortunate on because if I would have went to a team like probably Everton or Liverpool, we would have been conveyor belts of players and I might not have got the chance. Preston sort like didn't play me for 9 months, and then from sort like 16 to 18 I went right through all the teams, so I was very, very fortunate there, and I'll never forget Preston for that. A great, great club, and you know, looked after as well, like, you know what I mean, so I was very fortunate.
And the chance to play for a World Cup winner in Bobby Charlton.
Yeah, not Bobby Charlton, Bobby Styles. I remember, fantastic. You know, Alan Ball was there. Alan Ball Senior. You know, Alan Ball used to come and see his dad there sometimes. So he was my hero. So when he used to walk down, I'm thinking, gee. And I was very fortunate once again, probably with Alan Ball Senior, because he said to me, "You remind me of my son." Yeah, because size wise, like, you know what I mean? Exactly, so I was very fortunate, like, you know, because I could have gone to some club and said, well, you're too weak, blah, 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 out of it, like, you know. But, you know, they gave me time to develop. And I was very fortunate because in the time they gave me to develop, I could use my skills. Then I ended up playing for England Youth. And I was only sort of like 18 months after joining Preston where I couldn't even, like, actually take a corner. I wasn't strong enough. So I was very fortunate, you know. I went to such a good club, the first club I went to, you know, and they were great, you know, fantastic, and I'll never ever forget that club. Fantastic.
I suppose, really, as well, being an Everton fan, to actually have your manager, Harry Catterick, who was a great legend at Everton.
Yeah, Harry Catterick. And he was, I didn't know what to expect when I first met him. He was still living, you know, and he was very, 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 very quiet man. Yeah, but technically he was very, very good. I know he left Everton. I think there was a lot of bitterness when he left Everton because he had Everton's secretary with him come down. I remember once trying to sell me to Arsenal. I heard him talk about Everton's situation. Obviously, you're a kid, you don't know, like, you know, what's going on. But I think there was a lot of bitterness there. But no, I was very, very privileged. I think Harry Catterick, you know, and if you go in Everton's history, he's right up there with some of the best managers, like, you know. So very fortunate, like, you know.
You ended up moving to Burnley, staying in Lancashire, but moving to Burnley.
Yeah, I'll tell you something now, Tom. I've only known two Germans, two of them I've gone on with them, and both have affected my career deeply. One's Doug Ellis, obviously, you know. Yeah. But Bob Lord was, I can never forgive what he'd done to me there at Burnley, mate, because I was a right-sided midfield player, and I'd just played for England. I played for England under 23 a year before, and I think I'm right, I'm only one of three players of, this was third division, I remember, Tom.
Third division.
I was only one of three players who've ever done that. The other one, I think, was Teddy Venables might have done it, and I think the other was a wing who used to play for Tottenham, a good little, I can't remember his name, was he? Anyhow, couldn't myself, but I was a right-sided midfield player. Arsenal watched me. I went down to Arsenal and said, look, blah, 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 we've seen your placing for England, he said, I want you, we're going to take your ear. You're going to take over from George Armstrong eventually. He was a great right-sided midfield player, he said, but you're going to learn the Arsenal way. Anyhow, cut a long story short, Arsenal were a fantastic footballer, and I was privileged to go there. 100,000 transfer. See, Preston had to sell players, Tom. What he was at Preston, that type of club, but at the end of the season, because there's no money coming in, they've got to sell somebody.
Sell.
So, you know, eventually it was going to be me. Yeah. So he just happened to, the year before that was Mel Olden, fellow went to Newcastle, and that. It was my turn. Arsenal come in, but I didn't really. I was living with my grandparents, and they were struggling at the time financially, so I didn't really want to leave them. So I didn't want to do it, and I, you know, at the time, and you turn on it, and anyhow, I turned Arsenal down. And in between, obviously, Burnley came in, just sold Leighton James to Leeds or something like that for a record fee, 200,000. And the fans were giving Bob Lord a lot of stick. So next thing I know, they've come now. And I didn't know this at the time. He's coming out to our house, my house in Holmesgate. And he said, would you sign, blah, blah, blah. Didn't talk terms, just come in. Right, very bold. Yeah, get down Turf Moor tomorrow, we'll sign contract. Give me the same contract I was on at, it's only £100 a week, Tom. Which is, Arsenal going to offer me the same. So I was, there was no problem with it. I was quite happy with it. No problem, went down there. Come to make me debut on site. Now, Burnley in the first division, make me debut. He's put me as a left winger. He was picking the team at the time. And I'm thinking, hang on, this ain't working, this. I'm right-sided midfield player. And I've just played for England Youth, won the Mini World Cup, played for England under 23s from 18 months before when I was sort of like 19. So everything was going great for us. Now all of a sudden I'm a left winger. And I realised that it stopped my progress while that time. So I had to learn to do it. And I realised that I was just a piece of meat. He bought me to replace Leighton James half the price to get the crowd off his back, but he didn't think of me as a person, as my playing career, so he wasn't worried. So to be fair to you, like, I just thought, well, I can't play for a man like that, because he was Burnley, he was picking
Mr.
the
Burnley,
he was Mr. Burnley, like, you know. And in the end I thought, well, I can go two ways here. I can forget about it and end up going back in the third division, or say bugger up to him. And I used to went back in the afternoons and trained and just on my left foot and right and do other things. And in the end, it worked out because I came to Villa as a left-sided player. Well, right-sided player, I turned out, because I could play on the left then. But I'll never forget that. I'm a bit of I would like to think where I would have gone if because at the time Stevie Copper was in my position, and with no respect, I was at that time I was far ahead of Stevie. But he went to Man United, but ended up playing 40 odd times for Scotland. Great player. But I, at that time, I was far ahead of him because I played for England youth, and it stopped my career, at a vital age from 19, 20 to about 23, 24. That's a vital age to step into things. But I thought I enjoyed it all, man. I mean, Burnley was great, but I think the fans knew it wasn't right, and they were fantastic too, as like, you know what I mean.
I suppose now though, it's fashion to play a right winger, left winger. You must have been the first.
Well, no, yeah, but the thing is, though, Tom, then you weren't regarded coming inside and getting free kicks as successful. Like Ron Saunders, you say, if you don't get to that dead ball line and not five crosses over in a game, I'll get somebody who can do it. But when I first started playing out that way, I don't know, you had Dave Thomas and good wingers. Yeah. You regard, if you don't get to dead ball line, you're a failure. And you know, if you played out there, Tom, it's hard to get to dead ball line all the time. But no, because, you know, Burnley, it was...
That could be the hardest job in the game, getting to the byline and crossing. Yeah,
people don't... I'm not saying that because I played there, but it is an hard... You know, it's a very, very hard position.
At the time when fullbacks used to launch you.
Yeah, and not just that. The pitches were terrible as well. Like, you know what I mean? Your ball wasn't running properly and he said the fullbacks used to kick you all over the place. But no, I go back and I look back and I think, you know, what would have happened to went to Arsenal? I could have gone on, or you know, Burnley. Not 4 years off my career, really, of progressing. Really? Vital, like, vital. No question doubt about it. Like, you know what I mean? And I look back and I think, what might? But you never know. Then again, the Villa move come on, and everything was turned out okay. Like, you know.
How did that Villa move come about then?
I played in the reserves at Burnley, and I played against Villa reserves, and I just must have had a decent game, and then. I just got a phone call from Saunders saying, would you like to come down? And I was actually out in Southport. It was pre-season, not pre-season, end of season. I was out in Southport, and I bought my grandparents a phone. And when I went to come on, he said, Saunders have been on to you. It's about 3 o'clock in the morning now, because like, I was about 23, so you're allowed to go. And he phoned me up and he said, nice to hear the scouts' voice, blah, blah. Would you be interested in playing for Villa? And obviously, yeah, of course it would be, because, you know, it's a massive club. And I remember when I played for England Youth, I remember... What used to happen, the England youth team would play against the two teams that were in the final of the FA Youth Cup final the year before, and that was Liverpool and Everton. Yeah. Liverpool and Villa. Yeah. And I still remember going to Anfield and there was 14,000 there. Wow. And then going to Villa Park, there was 16,000 watching the Villa youth
team
against England youth. And I thought, this is massive. And it was the time you used to have the AVs on the...
Yeah, the V on the floodlights. Yeah.
And when you used to go down the motor, you're seeing them, you think, something about the club, like, you know, and... I said, yeah, certainly. Yeah, so I've come down and he sold the club to us. Like, we didn't have to sell the club to us. I knew how good it was, like, you know what I mean? How big it... Because I actually, when I was at Preston, when I first maybe Debbie, maybe the season after, I remember playing against Villa in the old third division at home, and there was 28,000 at Villa Park. And I think that was the same season when Bournemouth got champions, and there was 48,000 for third division. Third division, I'm thinking, well, what a big club this is, like, you know what I mean? Good supporting club, like, you know. So there was always a connection there, you know.
It turned out to be an amazing move for you. When you signed, though, you couldn't have imagined straight away what was going to happen.
No, well, I actually signed as a right-sided midfield player.
So Ron was going to play you in your proper position?
Yeah, he was going to play me in proper position. And what happened, I'll be fair, you know, and it, luck again, fate, I had I didn't start off well. But I had a bad injury. I had a problem with my knee. I couldn't stop. I couldn't sprint and stop. And it was not like it is now, getting in hospital straight away. You know what it was? It was roughness behind the kneecap. And I couldn't... If you're playing out the way, you know, it's a stop and start game. And I struggled. Then someone said to us, look, you're struggling a bit at the moment, but you're going to have to learn the way I want you to play. So we're going to put you in his... Which, fair enough. I accept it. Got it. Blah, blah, blah. And at the end of the season, I had to go and have an operation, which altered me. So I went into... Royal Orthopaedic, and he sorted everything out. So I came back, and in between time, they went and bought Des Bremner.
Right.
Well, obviously Des was the key to the team. You know, without Des in that Villa side, he was the clog. I wasn't going to take Des's place. I couldn't do what they're impossible. I understand. So I said, well, I'll play on the left. And all the bad times I had at Burnley, I stayed behind and learned to play on the left. So it worked out really in a strange way.
So it weren't a strange thing for you playing left.
No, not at all. No. I got used to it by, you know, coming back when I was at Burnley and trying to prove this Bob Lord wrong. Well, I did prove him wrong. I didn't feel uncomfortable, put it that way.
You won the league, under a run, yeah. 14 players. Yeah. And I've checked it. Out of those 14, I think there were 7 or 8 played every game.
Yeah, yeah, phenomenal, really, like, you know. So, especially, you know, I think there was more games then. I think it was more...
42 games
yeah,
then.
Yeah, there was more. And, you know, you play then, like, you know, yourself, like, that you could play on a Saturday, it'd be nice. You could play on a Wednesday, it could be freezing. You're playing a sand, it'd be full of mud. So you're always playing in different conditions, you know what I mean? So you never... So to really to, you know, really to play that many games, and it was very competitive then, very physical, you know. You know, don't forget, then you were having, you know, Forest were European champions, Liverpool were European before. I mean, the European Cup has stayed in the top flight for 6 seasons. So our league was the best in Europe, no question about it, because it's proven the top team. So, you know, you're playing against... The Blues, obviously, you play against the Blues, it ain't going to be a stroll in the park, is it? As you know yourself, mate, you know what I mean?
I remember some of the games.
Yeah, so you knew Stoke and Leicester, you know, who was a Scottish man from Leicester, who was Jock Wallace. He had him fit. So they were very, very, very tough physical games. But so to play that many games with... But I think we're lucky there, to be fair, John, because Saunders was very fortunate that the players he bought were a lot more naturally fit. They didn't have to worry about, like, you know, and I think that's very fortunate as a manager at the time, because they were all 7 or 8 10 players who were just naturally fit kids anyhow.
Is it fair to say, though, that because of what it gendered, the team spirit, that even with Knox you played?
Oh, yeah, no question, no. You know as well as me, in our time, there was loads of players played with strappings and, you know, broken toes, strap them up, get out there and play, like, you know what I mean? And it happened. It just happened, and that was it. And a lot of players. And because the lads were winning, you know, you didn't want to be out the squad. Simple as that, like, you know. And it was enjoyable. It was enjoyable as well, because, you know, I understand when you play these top teams now, when they go on these runs, they say they've got a good dressing room. But Phil had a great dressing room, a great bunch of lads, like, you know what I mean? A lot of them still, you know, see each other now, you know. And
did you all get on well?
No, I wouldn't say all got on well, but as in general, they were a great bunch of lads. You went out and have a drink together. There was a lot of fun in there, even the reserves, you know. It was fantastic, really. It was enjoyable to go in. I think that's probably what made us such a successful side. Because you know as well as me that when you look at a successful side, you say, we've got a good dressing room in there.
Yeah.
You very rarely have a bad dressing room and be successful. What I mean by bad dressing, people don't go and clang, you know, clicks and this. You know, it was a very, very good dressing room, like, you know, very important.
When in that season did the players suddenly start believing, listen, we could do this?
Probably when we beat Liverpool at home, Tom. We beaten, I think it was 2-1 at home, 2-1. And they were always your benchmark. They were your benchmark in Europe, weren't they? You know, if you beat Liverpool...
They were the European team.
Yeah, every team in Europe feared them. I thought if we could beat them, and well, I think we were comfortable with them, Tom, like, you know. So you know, we beat them, and then we thought, well, we've got a chance here. But what people, a lot of people... forget though, Tom. Remember, Ipswich was the darlings of everyone did Ipswich win it, but Ipswich got beat. They lost, dropped 3 points that season against one team, and that team got relegated. Mm. It was Norwich, the local derby.
The derby, yeah.
We had 7,
but Ipswich then, with the players they had, they were almost everybody's favourites.
Yeah, you were. Yeah, yeah. But what I always say to people, look. You know, no team are going to win the league game with 7 derbies. If you call Stoke and Leicester and all them on a derby, they're in the middle. But we had 7. And so at 7, there was 14 points. I think we got 13 out of the 14, which is phenomenal, really. And everybody says that. And when Ipswich, you look at Ipswich, they dropped 3 points against one team, local derby, who got relegated, which is Norwich. So it made it, you know, a lot of people forget them facts, you know. But listen, we're now, at the end of the day, we won enough games to win the league, and that was it, you know, simple as that, you know.
I suppose as well, I looked at the team, and we talked about the 14 that we used and the 11 regulars, if you like, but there was one or two who came in and did the job, Eamon Dacey and people like that.
David Geddes, you know.
David Geddes.
Yeah. Like, Eamon's a fantastic person to come in and, you know, do the job, like, you know. David Geddes was always a great fella. He was very physically strong and quick. He was ideal to come off the bench the last 10, 15 minutes, you know. He was always going to upset people. Like, and he wasn't the most technical player, but you put him on for the last 10, 15 minutes with his strength, and he was always a fit lad. He could upset teams, like, you know.
I mean, you got goals, and Withy got goals, and Gary Shaw got goals. But defensively, Villa were brilliant, I always thought. You know, with McNaught and Alan Evans and Kenny Swain and Colin Gibson.
Yeah,
and the keeper didn't perhaps get the credit he deserved at times, Jimmy Rimmer.
No, I think you know as well as me that you don't win the leagues by having the best attacking players. By don't giving goals away, and simple as that. And you know, the back line there was as good as Kevin Norton. I don't know, was as good as anybody in the country at the time. We had two attacking fullbacks. Villavoz had attacking fullbacks. Got forward and get back. The Jimmy Rim was very underrated. Great goalkeeper. Very underrated. Everything was built on strength at the back, and plus we had four in midfield, and including myself, which was as a unit it was very, very strong. But you don't give goals away, Tom. You win the league. You can't. So you've got to build from the back, mate.
That was a Saunders trait, wasn't it?
You look at all the managers.
And getting you fit.
I'm getting you fit. Keep fit. Get back positions. You get back. Everybody knew the job. But if you look at Alan Emmer, I think Alan Emmer scored seven goals for the centre back. But Ever was a centre forward. And he went back.
Dunfermline, he was.
And he went back. Then he were, Well, Ken was by far the better defender. He could read games. But Ever was. He caught the eye a bit. Ever, because he scored some goals.
Yeah, but looking at that defence, tell us about just the Ron Saunders effect, though, because pre-seasons with him were legendary. I mean, you did work.
Yeah. Well, listen. So we were probably the fittest team in the league. But I look at it this way: you're getting paid to keep yourself fit. Is there a better job? It's not getting paid to play football. You're getting paid to keep. Well, you are getting paid to play football, but you're getting paid to keep yourself fit. Is there a better job in the world? I very much doubt it. So I didn't mind the running. You hate it at the time. You think, what am I doing here? Like, you know what I mean? And what? But when you think, hang on, we've done it now. We're through it. And so on. There's pre-seasons were legendary. You worked your hard. And believe it or not, Tommy, he actually worked as harder in the winter. Than something, because the heavy grounds were coming. You do more work on your legs,
running power,
power, because you knew the heavy grounds were coming to get you through it. And that's a lot of people forget that. He really did work as hard in the gym and on our legs, and all this type of stuff. The background, heavy grounds, you need that power to carry through. But when I hear people say, they work hard, and I don't think any team's probably worked as hard as Saunders has said, but like I said, I didn't. I just thought that looking back at it all, I'm thinking, oh my God, we're getting paid, keeping fit. Is anything better than that? And if you get that attitude, you'd appreciate it more.
In those days, you had to win the league to get into the European Cup.
Yeah.
It wasn't fourth place, You had to win the league. Yeah. And you did it nip and tuck with Ipswich, but you did it in the end.
Yeah. Well, at the end, a lot of people said Ipswich were unlucky, but they weren't unlucky. We won more games, simple as that, that the end of the season, that's all they look at, the games. We won it, I remember a few lucky West Brom at home. West Brom were the better. West Brom were well in it for that. A lot of people forget about the West Brom. They had some great players, a good team, a very, very hard side to play against. But we played them at Villa Park, and they were the better side. And they could easily have won it that name. Then what happened was Brendan Batson bad back pass.
Yeah.
And Withy nipped in and knocked it over. Yeah. And then that was it. Then I thought, a bit of nerves. But, there's a few little games where things could have gone against us, but we had that. I think you need a lot of luck as well.
Yeah, for sure.
And that was one of the games we had a bit of luck with,
Who was in that team before we get on to the European Cup? Who in that team was the... Because everybody needs somebody that can relax players. Who was the funny man? Who was the guy who got you at it?
I'd probably pick myself and Peter, really. People like Brendan Owens.
Two Liverpudlians.
Yeah. People like Brendan. Ron Saunders was quite... Ron. He had a good... A lot of people think he was this dull fella, but he had a good sense of humour.
He had a great sense of humour.
Even the young lads used to come in. We used to love Eamon Dacey, because Eamon Dacey should never have been a professional footballer. Not for his ability-wise, because he was such a naive person, but he's great to have around. He fits everybody down to earth. Brendan Owens used to... Brendan Owens was one of these lads that when... The reserves used to play on a Saturday, Teddy could play at West Brom, and they might get back to watch the last 10 minutes of the game. We used to have a players' bar at Villa. If we won, Brendan Owen would come and be sulking. If we got beat, he'd come in cheering because it was only his chance of getting in the team. But the lads knew that. That's why it was a good dressing room, and that's what There was nobody in there. They were all quite funny lads. There was nobody Jimmy was very quiet. Jimmy Rim was a quiet. Kevin Norton was a bit quiet. But the rest were all a bit chirpy. Withy was a bit of a joker. Dez was a bit quiet. But the rest were okay. Morty's a strange one for the captain, because he never used to say much, Dennis. He never used to say much, even you probably know him later on. Great player on the pitch, but he wasn't very verbal, Gary Shaw's Gary, Gary's a cheapy chucky, and Sid was very quiet. So, it was, I would say Peter had a bit of a laugh with him. Kenny Swain had a good sense of humour as well. Like, you know, another Scouser, like, you know.
That was it. You mentioned the three Scousers. Tell us about your... The was it shock, surprise when Ron went?
Oh, big shock, mate. Didn't expect it. Listen, he's manager of the year. Mm-hmm. All right, fair enough. We're in the court final of the European Champions League, what it is now. And, you know, as a fella we all looked up to. We all admire him too, you know, thinking, it's, how could I put it? It's probably somebody like Pep walking out in Manchester City, you know what I mean? Halfway through his quarter final, what's all this about? It was a massive shock because we didn't expect, you know, and it was quite strange really because when he went in, he had a fit on the pitch, a coughing fit. Mm. And, you know, and the physio took him in, and an hour later, we seen him driving off in his car. So he must be bad. Anyhow, I get a phone call at night from Peter. Say, have you heard about Son? I thought he died. I thought, what? What are you joking? And then he said, no, he's resigned. And it was complete utter shock. Complete because he was Aston Villa. You know, he knew.
He turned the club round
big time. He built three teams. Ron, like, you know what I mean? And you know, what was good about it? The young lads trained exactly the same as the first teams. It was a conveyor belt coming through. Everybody knew exactly. He copycat what Liverpool done for years and years. We'll copy it. You know, you can't beat that formula, so we'll copy it. Bang, and you know, and that's what he was like. You know, so to have somebody on the bench, you know, you knew what he was saying is going to be spot on.
Yeah.
And to lose him, like, was to resign was a hell of a shock, really.
He was there for the first part of the European Cup, though, wasn't he?
The third round.
Like that, yeah. So, I mean, just talk to us about that European Cup, and without wishing to embarrass you, if you mention 1982 now, everybody ever talks about is Bayern Munich 1-0.
Yeah.
There was times when, I'm not being rude, but it looked like you might have gone out, but important goals from yourself got them through. I mean, but nobody ever talks about them early rounds. It's only about the...
Goals again, isn't it? Yeah. Well, the thing is, like, if you look at it, we had a fairly easy round the first one. I think it was 4-0 or 5-0.
5-0 and 2-0.
I mean, I'm very lucky, really, because I'm the very first one. I scored the first goal, so I got a free kick. So, and that was an easy game. The second leg was... fairly easy.
Donovan got two in that first game.
Teddy, people forget about that. Teddy Donovan.
Donovan.
In fact, he scored more goals than Peter. He scored the same goals as Peter.
Yeah,
he didn't even mention it, like, you know what I mean? Yeah, he scored two goals, and that was an easy game. Gary Shaw didn't play that game because he was injured, and then I think we played the second leg. I think Shaw scored two in the second leg. Yeah. Saunders on his use, he said to me, you're on the bench again. Every time he's an easy game coming, he always put him on the bench. And years later, when he packed in, I said, why do you? He said, easy, son, just keep you on your toes.
Is that what he did? Clever management.
He said, I always used to fetch me and Gary Shaw off, always me and him, nobody else. He said, easy, son, just make you think you didn't play well enough, you don't know you're going to be in the team next week.
You didn't take it for granted.
No, I didn't take it for granted.
Loved it.
You know, and think to myself, you know, I must have been dragged off 40 times in a career with him, and now he's telling me, like, 20 years after, it wasn't because I was playing bad, it's because to keep you on your toes. Man management, mate.
Yeah, brilliant.
He'd done the job, didn't he?
Brilliant. Yeah. The second round... And this is what I'm on about. I hope people... I'm sure Villa fans will remember, but you went through on away goals and you scored two away goals in a win away from home.
Yeah.
I mean, that was vital.
Yeah, we've talked about this. In a cup competition, a cup run, whatever team you're playing for, even if you're playing Sunday League, you can look back and think, that was a moment... You don't know it at the time, but that was a moment what turned it for us.
When you look back.
I'm always, people always say, oh, my two goals. I got goal of your watch. I ran my length of the pitch and it was very lucky I was in that position to do it. And I got goal of Europe for that and I got a lovely war for it. But what people forget, though, Tom, is this is what won us the European Cup. Jimmy Rimmer saved a penalty.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
He said a penalty and it went out for a corner. Now, that would have been sort of like 1-0 or 2. I don't know what it would have been then. 2-1 for them or 2-0. Yeah. I don't know. And it went out for a corner. From that corner, the ball went out and I went and scored.
Vital moment.
Now, if Jimmy hadn't saved that penalty,
you'd have been out.
We'd have been out, mate, because they were the best side.
Was Dynamo, wasn't it?
Yeah, they were the fantastic side, the incredible good side, technically good, running off the ball, and the movements off the ball were so good. I think they knocked Liverpool out maybe the year before, a year after. They're very, very good side, and we went out. And people always forget about that, Jimmy. I always feel a bit sorry for Jimmy because that was without that save. And for me, going away, being the opportunity to go away and score the second goal, which basically got us through, it's all forgotten. It's all forgotten, mate. Like, goal scorers always remembered, aren't they?
Always.
Like,
you know, the quarterfinal, which was, I suppose, technically the third round, the quarterfinal was against another Dynamo. This time it was Dynamo Kiev. Yeah. And, I mean, no problems there. Away, typical Ron Saunders, 0-0 away, and won the home game 2-0.
Yeah, well, they were a big side. And a blocking play from European Player of the Year. Yeah. I mean, I've never played a side more physically bigger than them. And, yeah, massive. And they changed. I remember them changing the game from 1,000 miles away, like 2 days before, typical Russian at the time. Yeah, they said it was down the Crimea somewhere. And it just tried to upset the rhythm, everything. And but they were physically big. So, but the thing is, and what Saunders built in over the years, we knew how to play. We knew what we had to do. So nothing changed. We just kept to our formation. We knew what our job to do. And, you know, we went away there. And we could have sneaked 1-0 because Gary Shaw beat the defender and Gary Shaw nicked on him. But what people don't realise, that them two teams, like the Moscow teams, they were actually the national sides. There's only two big ones here, so it was the national side you were playing. And we found out years and years, we all know years later, they were on steroids, drugs, because that's come out for athletes as well. But I've never, ever, Tom, played against a side as physically as been. And powerful lads. And, but the funny thing was, Tom, we played them 2 weeks later in the second leg, and I felt sorry for them because, they were just looking around. You know, the bus, they had a bus driver, and we knew the bus driver, obviously, we weren't a Russian bus, it was. And he said, as soon as they come to the hotel, the curtains had to be pulled up over on the bus windows. No radio on, nothing on, and it was just so, like, you know, propaganda. So I felt a bit sorry for him. Yeah. And he played like that in the second leg, very very muddy pitch, physically strong. If you look at the side, how physical strong, but they didn't have that spark about they had the first leg. And I just thought, and I went in, I just wished him all the best. I'm going on the bus after, but they were all sat like that. And the bus driver was saying, it's been like since I picked him up for 2 days. No radio on, all the curtains drawn through, straight into the hotel. I felt a bit sorry for him because, you know, you're seeing another way of life then, like, you know.
They weren't allowed to see how good you got it, I suppose.
Yeah, you're quite right, 100%, yeah.
Then you come to the semi-final, yeah. And again, at home, 1-0 win, 0-0 away, and a certain Mr. Morley got the goal.
Yeah, it was quite funny, actually, because...
Was Tony in charge then, Tony Barton?
He was in charge for the... I think the Anderlecht game, Funny thing, I missed a sitter before. Exactly the same as went through left wing. Obviously, he's not my strongest foot, my left foot, and I scoofed it and hit the bleeding corner flag. So I've come back and some bloke was giving me some stick on the toe. Yeah, using it. And all below, 5 minutes later, exactly the same, bang, bottom corner. So I've come back to him and I've lost my head at him. I said, no, he was bleeding stupid. Like, you know. But I did. I remember thinking his shot, I'm thinking, semi-final. A chance to go, because you know you'll get many. And they just knocked AC Milan out, something like that. Your proper side, all internet, a fantastic side. And I'm thinking, you won't get many chances like this, Jesus Christ. And one came, fine, and I put it in, and I just lost beer and bang. And once again, they were a better side on that night than us. They had a few good chances, but we took our 1-0, took it all. We knew over the. We'd get chances, even though we went to nil. We had a couple of chances, it didn't work out. But defensively, it was a master plan by, you know, we just didn't give them that much space away from home. But the damage was done. We scored. The secret of them, Tom, is do not concede goals at home in that champ in the European Cup. Then don't concede
away goals.
Yeah, don't concede, because away goal, like you say, Berlin, when I scored the two, got us through because we got beat 1-0 by them at home.
They counted double.
Counted double. You know, so it was very fortunate, like you say, because that was the secret. Do not concede a goal away from home. You know what I mean? Simple as that, like, you know.
Then you're on to Rotterdam. And, I mean, every Villa... They must have had about 400,000 in the ground if you talk to every Villa fan that was there.
I would say that. Everybody, I was there. I'm thinking, there was only about 48,000 there. Like, everybody I speak to, I'm thinking, it must have been 80,000 there. Because, well, I was there that day, and they're only 20 years of age. I was there. Of course you was, mate. Like, yeah, you know what I mean? No, but the thing is, one of the reasons wasn't a big crowd. People said, well, I wasn't a big crowd. What you got to realize, it was in... Feyenoord, which is Dutch.
Yeah.
The Dutch don't like the Germans. And the Dutch thought the Germans were going to batter us. So there wasn't many neutrals there there. And that's kept a lot of
crowd. They were red hot favourites, I think.
They were incredible favourites. I mean, yeah, they were, everybody thought, well, we'd only conceded one goal that competition. I think Berlin. Was it Berlin?
Yeah, no, it was one.
One?
Yeah, one goal.
One goal, yeah. So we knew defensively, were good enough, but we knew we had enough players attacking wise, we'd get a chance. We knew that. We'd always know, as long as we, like I was going back to keeping a clean sheet, as long as we don't give the ball or give a goal away, we've always got a chance of scoring. And it happens, it doesn't matter who you're playing against. I know I keep all the about this thing. Yeah, we had a lot of chances, but what you got to realise, I've seen European Cup finals since then. I've watched Man United, Bayern Munich, and I've watched Man United against somebody, and they have been battered, but but it always seems to come by this game, Villa, but oh, they battered, yeah. But I've seen other European Cup finals where teams have got battered and sneaked it. It's about winning and not conceding goals.
And you crossed the ball for the winner.
Yeah. But that's what I got paid to do. You know, I mean, I knew when Gary Shaw passed me, I actually said before the game, if I get one chance, I'm going to score or I'll make it for somebody. That's not being arrogant. So, I mean, I love the European game for simple reason. You were man marked, and I love the man marked bit.
Did you like that?
I love the man marked because he's like just you against it. When I played in England towards the end, all you used to do was cut your service out. And if you're playing out well, if you've got a midfield player front instead, you can't get service.
You're out
of the game, and you get frustrated. Where in Europe, you man mark you. And I used to love that. They didn't say, well, you marking. That was a personal battles again, win your personal battles. But when you're not getting service as a wide man, you can't do nothing about it. And years ago, then you get dragged on, you get frustrated. But Europe was different because they used to be man mark you. But I always knew in that game, it was a German international, and I knew I'd get one chance against him. I got one chance again, turning both ways, and I crossed it. And my job then was to get the ball across there. The striker's job was to get the ball in the back of the net. Mm. The only thing I was concerned with, Gary passed me on the touchline, so I know he ain't going to be in there. And I know he ain't quicker than me, so he ain't going to beat me in the box. I thought, but as long as I get the ball over, I could see Peter. And to be honest with you, mate, it come off his ankle. Yeah. And if he would have caught it fairly, the keeper would have saved it. He would have went it down the middle, but it's come off his ankle and just scooped off at the post line. And like I've always said, it's the luckiest goal Peter's probably ever scored.
But probably the most important
in Villa's history. Like, you know, but if you speak to Peter now, he'll say, "Oh, I meant it." A load of bleeding lies, but you know what I mean? He was in the right place, right time, and that was it, mate.
So, this is a difficult question because I actually say Tony Barton was probably one of the nicest men I ever had to interview. I thought he was a smashing bloke. But I can't help thinking, and I wonder what the players think, was that Ron's team, though, that won the European Cup?
Well, yeah, nothing changed, mate. And Tony was saying, don't try and change anything. Don't change anything. Don't try and change the formation. These lads have been used to doing this for 4 or 5 years, you know. That's where he was very clever. He said, a lot of managers come and try and change everything. Why change somebody that's successful, you know? Yeah. So, and he kept it going, mate. And, of course, he was Ron Saunders' side, you know what I mean? You know, horrible thing to say, but a lot of lads would probably like to have Saunders been there at the time, but it happened, he went, and that was it. And fair credit to Tony and Roy McLaren.
They didn't
change anything, mate. They said, we just keep
that was going. Clever.
Very clever. Didn't keep everything kept going. The training was the same. The lads were always fit. They knew what they had to do, so that, you know, we knew, you know. And what was good at the Villa, and when you joined them at 15, up to like, if you got in the first team, every team trained the same position, a bit like Liverpool for years. So when that somebody stepped up from the A side or the B side, they didn't have to change anything.
Nothing strange.
It's just like going in, but like putting some socks in. You know exactly what you had to do, which was like whoever came into the first team, they didn't have to change anything. They didn't have to do a different position. They knew exactly what they had to do. So that's what Tony done, and you know, he just kept it as it was, like, you know.
Just looking at the European Super Cup.
Not the light on, mate.
No, European Super Cup.
Yeah, they forget about that. I mean, we go to Barcelona, you know, and, you know...
Was that Cruyff's team, wasn't it?
No, I don't know who was the manager then. I know Maradona was there, and he won't play against us because of the Falklands.
Oh, right. Okay.
Which was a bit of a disappointment. He refused to play against us, like, you know. But, you know, you forget about them, you know. They beat us. It was the first time ever, Tom, we went to Barcelona. I've never seen this before. They had a... It was quite a great, strange formation they played. They played the two wide. They played a right winger and a left winger, like Liverpool do now. But the two strikers, as soon as they got the ball in midfield, the two strikers would... We man-marked the two strikers. The two, Kevin Norton and Alan, would man-mark. As soon as the midfield... But they'd sprint out to the touchlines, and Ken and Alan followed them, and the two wingers came in.
Came inside.
They were leaving massive
big
gaps.
Holes.
And it took us about... half time, 3 hours of that. And I've never seen that before. It was, when you look at it, think of it, because with my man, it was very clever. Because they had a few chances in the first half, like maybe score. And then we obviously, all we did now, we realised, well, we just dropped Dennis Morton a bit further back and put him in that gap. As he would have been over, always. But it was very clever the way they done it. It was very, very clever. First thing, you know, I thought, well, are we going to fix this? Because I'm having too many chances here. And you could see what was happening, but it was hard to change things at the time. They were just had a talk and Dennis went back. But the second leg, I come off injured after about half an hour, I think, and we basically had a reserve side up, and we batted them, and they, you know, it was, I mean, I think Wally come on, I think Andy Blair played, I don't know who else played, and we didn't really have a strong side, and I realised then, because they were the UEFA champion, and the UEFA Cup then was a great trophy to win.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
It was a big club. I'm thinking, we made them look second rate. So I realised what a good squad of players. We had young lads coming through as well, like, you know what I mean? So
The next season you went to the quarterfinal, but, you know, more important than that, the team, I think they started to break, it looks like they were breaking, or was it broken up too early?
I think there's only one answer to that, yeah, and that was Doug Ellis. Disgraceful what he done, you know what I mean? I mean when he came, I was 27, my career was finished with Villa, if I finished with him, yeah. And I look back now, like I said before, there's two I look back where I really enjoy myself, where I didn't enjoy myself, you know. I suppose that Burnley were a different class, but I didn't come on, the situation was a joke, what he done to us. Everything's gone great at Villa until Doug Ellis come in, not just for me, for a lot of players and the club itself. I mean, what he done to some of them players there, and you know, I mean, somebody at 27, they used to be both one of the best players on the left-hand side in Europe. You don't all of a sudden not good enough to get into Villa's first team, because he actually was sort of like picking the team more than anything else. He was advising Tony what to do, like, you know, he was taking over. And he didn't really want any Ron Saunders signing in the side, because he was never in charge when they were very successful. So he wanted sort of like, oh, you know, if this team keeps winning stuff, it won't be Ron Saunders' side, even though he's left. And them two didn't get on, they didn't see eye to eye anyhow. So he decided to come in and change everything, you know. But I'm a great believer. Fair enough, like we talked before, to me, football's a conveyor belt. I mean, getting at 15, if you manage to get 35 at our time, you've done fantastic. Yeah. You fall off in between, you know, that's what it's all about. But you don't expect to be pushed out when you're 27. You're not really at your prime, like, you know what I mean? And, you know, and it wasn't because there was somebody better, it was because one man didn't want us in there, like, you know, and unfortunately that man was Mr. Ellis.
You went to West Brom,
yeah,
from there, and had a decent time there, I think, didn't you?
Yeah, well, the thing is, it's quite strange, really. I remember going there, I didn't want to leave Villa, you know. One of the reasons, I'll be honest with you, one of the reasons, though, I mean, this, I'll tell you a little story about Mr. Ellis. When I was leaving, I was owed a few grand... loyalty. I've just said this for so many years. I think I was 2 months or 3 months away from 5 years. And you allow someone after 5 years, no problem. So I'm leaving. Now I know I'm not getting the side. I know I'm not going to get it. I'm 27. West Brom. I'm with my girlfriend at the time. I'm settled in Birmingham. I didn't have to move house. They gave me the same salary that I was at Villa. The only difference was they didn't have a club cars. And I had a club car at Villa. So, and I was meeting blah, blah, blah with Ron Wiley.
Yeah.
We came. And as we were talking over time, and Doug Ellis come in the meeting, he said, Anthony. And I thought, oh, this Anthony, what's happening? I said, all right, Mr. Ellis, no problem. He said, West Brom haven't got club cars. Is it possible I can keep my car for a month? The end of the month, I'm due my bonus for 5 years. Everything, yeah. Anthony, what you've done for this club, yeah, you keep it, don't you? Get yourself sorted out, no problem, blah, blah, blah. Shook hands. 3 weeks later, I phoned Stevie Stride up, the secretary. He says, Stevie, any chance of the check of me loyalty? I come back 5 minutes later, and he said, do you want the good news or the bad news? I said, and I sensed it when he was in. He said, you will not sign the check for your loyalty. And he's told me to tell you to get the car back straight away, because it's not your car, it's a club car. And now, this is what you've got to realise now, why my head went at West Brom. So no problem. So I've gone in to see, I've gone on to the PFA. Now I'm 3 weeks short of my 5 years contract for Jimmy Lordy. He knew it. And he said, the PFA said, look, you take him to court. We all know he's done you. But if you take him to court, you're going to lose.
Technically, he's right.
And he knew. done me out my loyalty and car and everything. I thought it left a bitterness in me, and I didn't want to go to West Brom then. I thought, no, I don't want to go. But I've signed a contract. I thought, I ain't going to. And then it was quite funny, actually. I actually scored on my debut for West Brom, and I got booed. I got booed for scoring, and I thought then, this ain't going to work out for me. And it'd be fair to you, in the first 8 or 9 games, I scored quite a few goals for the winger. And it just went from bad to worse. They just didn't like Villa players, and they hated it. And to be honest here, I went on loan to Blues.
Scored 3 and 4.
3 and 4. And I tell you what, I remember the Blues fans giving a stand ovation when I left. Now, you think the Blues fans would hate you, but the West Brom fans were. You know, I'll never forget that. You know, it was a great little club, but I just didn't enjoy. I didn't enjoy playing because they were just getting booed. Whatever I'd done, I was going to get booed. Like, you know what I mean? And you can't have that. You know what I mean? In the end, I thought, well, I've been done out of money, done out of this. Come here. These don't know the story. I'm psychologically, I don't want to be there. You know what I mean? And all of a sudden, like, they booed me. Even though, I mean, you don't get booed on your debut, so when you score a goal and you get booed, you know, you'd realise then it ain't going to work out for you, is it? Like, you know, and pity really, it was a good club, but they just hated Villa players, and I mean, with a passion. Where the Blues hate Villa, it's a different type of hate. I can't explain what it is, but I went there for a month and you know, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I had a great time there, mate.
You went abroad then, I think China, you went all sorts of places. You even went to eventually Tampa Bay Rowdies, although they were only called Tampa Bay till you went.
Tampa, yeah, they were Rowdies then, like, yeah. No, I was, once again, for politics. I remember Rodney Marr saying, he was, come over here. And I was at West Brom, and West Brom agreed to give me a free
transfer.
That
was the second spell at West Brom.
Yeah, agreed to give me, because I remember Brian Talbot saying to me one game, and, you know, he said to me one game, he said, look, all I want you to do is kick the ball up the field. Do you want me to put the light on?
No.
He said, get the ball up the field. We've got two lads up front and run all day and kick the ball and get it. I said, well, if I kick the ball upfield, I'm giving the ball away. He said, well, if you don't do it, you're not playing. I said, well, I don't want to play then. I said, I just, you know, I'm just giving the ball away, kicking the ball. Let me do what I want to do. No, you play like this, kicking. I'm the manager. I said, well, you're giving the ball away. So I said, Then I realised then, this game ain't. The Vogue team then was Wimbledon, put the ball in the mixer. Let's play like them. And I thought, if I got to play football, I'd whack the ball in a minute. It's just not my type of football. And I thought, I wasn't enjoying it, whacking the ball in the corner, hitting them. So I thought, great, Tampa Bay, suit me fine. He said, we'll give you a free transfer. You won't get me no money. Oh, for not giving me a free transfer. Went there. No problem. Happy that. But I went, I thought, Rodney Marsh would suit me. Sort of myself.
You like to play the game the right way.
But I went there. But what happened was, I played one game, and then somebody from the opposition, it was someone in Florida, Fort Lauderdale striker, something like that, complained, said, well, how can he be playing? He was playing last year. But Rodney Marsh, what he done, he didn't do his homework, but he didn't get the right password or what, and I couldn't play. So I was stuck out there. I was stuck out there like for 4 months. Well, it could be a better place for 5 months.
I
trained every day. Yeah. I trained every day with them. Good bunch of lads. I could have been, you know, I could have been in the middle of Moscow if I wouldn't know what I'd done then. But no. And in the end, I came back. And I went, where did I go to? I can't remember where I went to after Tampa, mate. I think I might have packed in after. I might just play Stratford.
I don't think you went anywhere after Tampa, to be fair.
And that was it, really. And what happened? I just got fed up with football then, because I was catching the bad parts of it all. You know, instead of just going and enjoying it all, like, you know, I thought, well, I'm stuck out.
You talk about highs and lows. You've had them all, haven't you?
Yeah, I've had highs and lows. Yeah, no problem. And I mean, my big scrap with the two Germans, Bob Lord and Doug Ellis. Like, Doug Ellis, especially, for simple reason, because he ruined a great side, ruined my career at Villa. But with Bob Lord at Burnley, what could have happened? He hadn't pumped on the left hand side, you know. But then on the sweet thing, I went to Villa and played on the left hand side, you know. But you don't know, you know. You look at some of these players and the sugar coated they're going to play in one position all their lives, and no, but you know, listen. Yeah, I've no regrets about it. I've got to be very grateful about it all, like Tom.
How big a deal wearing the Three Lions shirt?
Oh, phenomenal. Phenomenal. Don't care, I play every level professionally. Youth, all the under 23B and full. So to win a full set all the way through. Listen, I would love to have won more caps, and I'm sure I was good enough to win a lot more caps, but it didn't happen. But I suppose if you win 1 or 100, you still represent your country at the highest level, like, you know. And funny thing is, that's easier football than so easy that football, international football. I just didn't find it hard at all. But I think you've got to be a regular in the side. Unfortunately, when I got in England side, Doug Ellis come to Villa. Now, I couldn't get in Villa side with Doug Ellis there. So it wasn't like it is now. If you're not in your first team,
you didn't get to England.
You didn't get anywhere near it. It's simple as that. Like, but now you can play in the A side and you can get in England side. Like, you know what I mean? It was different then. If you're out the scene, you don't get a chance. Like, you know what I mean? But listen, at the end of the day, like, you know. I played professionally every level for England, so from youth all the way through, and I won it Mini World Cup England Youth and stuff like that. So I've always, but I'm very proud, mate, very proud. Like.
Best player you've played with?
I always go back to one person. You know, you always say, Gary, I played with Brian Robson, but I can, you know, I played the England side, all these great players, and Gary Shaw was a great, phenomenal player, Gordon Cowan's phenomenal, Dennis Moore. But I always go to one person, not telling, you know, you've mentioned this before to me, I always go, technically, Des Bremner, because everybody needs him in the side. Mm. You know what you're going to get from him in the training session on a Monday morning, what you're going to get Saturday afternoon. Exactly the same.
Toughest opponent?
I was going to say Noel Blake when he butted me in the nose, like, you know what I mean? But if you're not physically or toughest person to play against.
Yeah, toughest. Both.
The hardest person I found to play against, but you know, was a fella play for Arsenal at right back, because he knew his angles. He didn't dive in. What was his name now? Irish fella.
Pat Rice. Pat Rice.
Yeah. He knew his angles. He knew I was stronger on my right. So what he used to do, he used to put me in positions where I'd have to cross my left, where it'd be swingers instead of pinging them in. He was very good at that. Very good technique at that. But I would say one of the dirtiest ones I play against, he used to play for Middlesbrough called John Spraggs.
Yes.
He had legs, thighs like tree trunks. And every time I played against him, it was always, always muddy. And he always come out with his shorts, with his sleeves, and I'm thinking, oh no, I'm going to get a good hiding today. And I did. I did. He wasn't interested in playing for me. He used to welly me. And he was always been blow up at Middlesbrough on Wednesday night, or Tuesday night, when it was pouring down. And you're thinking, I don't want to be here.
And that'd be the old ground, wouldn't it?
That's the old ground, yeah. And I'm thinking, yeah, he was physically dirty. He wasn't interested in playing football. He just intimidated you, like, you know.
Villa fans absolutely revere that 82 side. Do you think, why, you know, because a lot of Villa fans have said to me in the past, there should be a statue to them lot, you know, there should be a statue. Yeah. I mean, do you feel you were recognised enough?
No, that came from one person, Doug Ellis, again. I mean, what you must realise, Tom, is that, you know, I've got no, people say, oh, you don't speak ill of the death, but, you know, he's ruined a lot of people's careers at Villa. A lot of things, you know, he's done, which wasn't very nice, a lot of people don't know about. But what you've got to realise, there wasn't even a photograph of the lad that won the league up there for 20 odd years when he was German. You've been down there. You know, it was only when Randy Lerner come back years later that he started putting things back in. I mean, how can you win the league, European Cup, and not being recognised? He's just and the Super Cup, and playing the World Club champion as well. Mm-hmm. The four biggest things you can play for, and one man just wouldn't have it. He was would have nothing to do. He wasn't his team. So you know, that was the main reason. There was nothing there at all. John Gregory had to buy a European Cup to put on this display at Villa Park when Doug was there. That's, you know, it's crazy when you think of it. You know, we must be the only side for 25, we win the league. 20, was nothing at all. If somebody came in, didn't know what Villa existed, they wouldn't know we won the league in 82, 80, 81, 81, 80, 81, whatever it was, like, you know. Because one man, he wasn't there and he didn't want it. Simple as that, mate. You know, it's not rocket science.
But whatever else, no matter what they said or didn't do, the fans know, and the fans always show their appreciation.
Yeah, listen, like I said, Tom, we're very grateful, you know. But like you said before, you know, the amount of people I've heard, and you just had a laugh about it before. You said, oh, I was there. Like you said, it was only 40-odd thousand there, you know. I think I must have spoke to every one of them 40-odd thousand, and the rest, yeah, I was there. Yeah, thank you very much, like, you know what I mean? But no, because Villa are a yo-yo club. They're up and down, you know what I mean? And, you know, at that time we took them to the Ice Peak and we could compete with everybody and they were so happy. And then they obviously, a couple of years later, they got relegated. Was it 2 years later? They got relegated and they're up and down. But I personally think now, I think Villa in the best position they've ever been in for a long, long time with these new owners. Mm. They can now compete with the big boys, Tom, like, you know what I mean? So, like, example, 100 million for Jack Grealish. It was them that put the money on him, on his head, you know, because they know, you know, years ago, if somebody come in like for 20 million, so they'd have to sell, get money in.
Yeah.
But these people got the big money now. They don't have to sell
unless it's silly money.
It's 100 million. Let's be honest. So I think I would love to play for the club now because I think they're only going to go one way. I think with these owners, as long as they stay as the owners, and let's be fair, they've backed Dean tremendously. You know, put money into it, and the training ground is as good as anywhere now. You know, so. The future's looking very, very bright for Villa now. You know, I'm a bit jealous, really, to be honest. Yeah. I'm sat here. I'd love to play for them now. I really, really would. Because you go down there, I mean, you know, you go down. I've seen you down there. The place is buzzing. Yeah. It's great. You go in the bars after, you know, and I do the corporate there and I speak. And there's a buzz about the place again. It hasn't been there for years and years, like, you know. And, yeah, and you know, the team is starting to get a half-decent signing, like, you know. And I just think it's going the right direction. I can see him pushing. But then again, once again, Newcastle just come and been bought by, so they're going to have money again now, aren't they? You know what I mean? Everton are up there, so, you know, it's going to be a lot. It's going to be very, very hard for a club like Villa to break into that top four. But I think we're going in the right direction.
That'll do. Tony, thanks for being on the podcast. The game's gone. It's been brilliant, mate. Thank you.
Tom, it's a pleasure meeting you, mate. Okay. Always.
Thanks very much indeed. Well, there you are, folks. Wow, fascinating. Tony Morley there, his career. We'd love you to leave a review. Whatever you do, leave us a review. Good, bad or indifferent, I'd love to hear from it. Until the next time, thanks for being with us.